Most high-profile senior jobs lack work-life balance. But for CEOs at the top of their organizational pyramids, it's especially true. Stepping into the role means stepping into a job in which it's easy to feel that your work and your life are owned by a board, shareholders, customers, and a workforce. Many say that a leader doesn't do the job of a CEO. They live it.
So I remember sitting at my son's high school basketball games, and at halftime, while the other parents talked to each other, I was reading books and notebooks and getting ready for the next week's meetings.
That's Bob Eckert, former chairman and CEO of U.S.-based toy manufacturer Mattel. The multitasking he describes echoes a daily dilemma faced by CEOs juggling work and home. So what separates the CEOs who are merely surviving their packed calendars and those who are consistently showing up for the people in their lives who matter most? Nick Proper is the CEO of Impact Human Performance, a U.S.-based coaching company that has trained leaders at organizations such as Goldman Sachs, the U.S. Air Force, and Amazon. The company's work focuses less on time management and more on energy management. In a conversation with World 50's community of aspiring CEOs, he described how high-performing leaders often operate in what he calls an unsustainable energy system. It's a state of high productivity and high stress, fueled by grit, willpower, and determination.
The problem with that, ironically, is in the short term, it works, right? You are getting it done. You are meeting the objectives. You are pushing the businesses forward. But the problem is that system at some point gets compromised. You will run out of grit, willpower, and determination. You may have even had a day like this in the last few weeks. This is when you wake up in the morning and you're sitting on the edge of the bed and you have to give yourself a bit of a talking to get up and get going. You know, can I do it again today? That's just a reminder of how fragile willpower is as a predominant energy source for sustainable performance.
When leaders seek a work-life balance, what they're often actually seeking is the ability to maintain enough energy to stay productive throughout the workday and attentive to their personal commitments afterwards. The problem is that many CEOs and their workdays depleted.
How many of you feel like you give your best energy to the job? And when you turn around at the end of the day for whatever is waiting for you, whether that's friends or family or things that you intended to do this morning that had to wait until you got everything else done, we're not investing well in those things. And the problem with that is we get a lot of the refueling from that part of our life and we kind of switch the tap off. Because if we're not managing ourselves well throughout the day, by the time we end the day, we start canceling all the things that we know actually bring energy to us. You start looking at your weekends and looking at the calendar and thinking, I don't want to do any of those things. Canceling dinner arrangements with great friends or hoping that they cancel before you cancel so that you can get out of it and maintain your integrity in the relationship. Like we've all done that, haven't we?
Common wisdom says the solution is to build resilience. It's a buzzword that's often used to encourage leaders to muscle through periods of high stress, said Proper. And though that's sometimes necessary, resilience means something more than working harder.
Resilience is the acquired and dynamic process of acknowledging, recovering, and growing from stress in order to strengthen future performance. This is the kind of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. The truth is, if you don't know what you're doing, just weathering the storm, I'm not sure it really makes you stronger. I think it makes you more sinewy and kind of tough, but I don't think it makes you stronger. I don't think you're growing into increased capacity for performance. The truth is, small changes activated with discipline over time is the only way to make sustainable change.
A good starting point for CEOs is to identify the times of day when they're most susceptible to responding to situations negatively.
Some people acknowledge that, yeah, I just start my day and I'm straight into it and I'm not warmed up and often I'm really pretty poor in some of my responses first thing in the morning. And of course, a lot of people are like, yeah, I'm at my absolute worst towards the end of the day when I've got nothing in the tank. And then also starting to think about the types of work that you're doing. And of course, as harsh as this sounds, the people that you're letting into your space. Right? If you're not controlling your energy proactively, someone is managing it on your behalf. And candidly, in your personal lives, you also need to think about who do I want to hang out with in my very limited downtime so that they refuel me as opposed to hanging out with people or doing things that drain the energy. So a good example is maybe you're in big group discussions all morning and then in the afternoon, you've got just a whole series of one-to-ones Like you're going to need some kind of deeper reset to put down what you've done in the morning and be ready to bring your best self forward to perhaps these more intense meetings where you have to be like much more engaged. So when are you going to start identifying and dropping into your calendar? What I love about working with the most senior folks is you have more control over your calendar than many. You should start dropping 5-minute recovery breaks into your calendar, right? Where you think you're going to need them.
The best CEOs seem to manage their time like elite athletes, with recovery and endurance at the forefront. But even high performers must know their limits. Here's Wanda Austin, former president and CEO of the Aerospace Corporation, a nonprofit that operates a U.S. government-funded research center supporting space missions.
The first thing is to admit that, you know, you don't have superpowers, that you're human like everybody else. You get worn out. You get tired. You cannot lead the company, lead others, if you're not taking care of yourself and doing some preventative measures, I would call them, to ensure that you're able to engage on the hard problems of the day. Lots of times you'd say, as a CEO, well, you know, I don't have time to keep my doctor's appointments. And I had an assistant that said, no, you know, I'll make sure that we schedule the time and get you in so that you get to the dentist, you get to your regular medical appointments and anything else that you need, because it really is important for you to be able to be ready to stand up as a leader and lead your organization on a moment's notice. Because you don't get, you know, 6 weeks advance notice to say, hey, get prepared, you're getting ready to have a crisis. So you have to always be ready. And to do that means that you have to always take care of yourself.
Ron Williams, former chairman and CEO of U.S. health insurance provider Aetna, has found that trade-offs are inevitable when managing personal and professional priorities. In a conversation with members of World 50's Next Generation Leader community, he described how CEOs should understand what's most important to their loved ones. Some moments are can't-miss moments, a wedding, a prom, a graduation. But there are others that might not be as obvious.
I would live within about 5 miles of where I worked so that I could schedule my son's events on my calendar. Happiest day I ever saw was when he wanted to play soccer as opposed to t-ball and baseball, because soccer pretty much starts on time and ends on time. Those of you who've been to a t-ball game, it's like a mess. They're playing, throwing things up in the air, chasing butterflies. So treating the schedule, you know, the fan, and I didn't make everything. That's the other, you got to be prepared about the trade-offs. And one thing my son told me when he's now 30-something, which I never understood, was he said he didn't miss me not being at all those things. He thought a bunch of them were a waste of his time, too. But the thing that mattered most was whenever he called me, I answered the phone and talked to him. Didn't matter where I was, didn't matter what I did. And I had no idea how important that was to him, but it turned out to be enormously important.
Some things simply won't fit into a CEO's calendar, said former Mattel CEO Bob Eckert. Sometimes elimination of certain activities, even as a temporary solution, is the best way to find energy for more pressing priorities.
There are things you're not going to be able to do that you might otherwise want to do. For example, I always wanted to play golf, but I knew as long as I was in the position I was in, golf wasn't going to happen. So I took it off my agenda and I didn't beat myself up about not playing golf. Rather, when the day came and I no longer had to spend my time and energy on the CEO job, I took up golf. And I spent a lot of time and energy and mental commitment about the game of golf.
Embracing periods of daily recovery and reset gives leaders a more practical approach for sustaining the energy to engage as their best selves, both at work and at home. It gives them the freedom to adapt to business fluctuations, to significant life events, and to their own well-being, knowing that balance will look differently each day. Mark Bertolini is the CEO of Oscar Health, a technology-driven health insurance provider in the U.S. He also served as co-CEO of Bridgewater Associates from 2022 to 2023 and CEO of Aetna from 2011 to 2018. He has found that leaders are often misguided when they assume their lives can be easily separated into two boxes, work and home.
One of my favorite movie scenes is the end of the movie Tombstone. And Wyatt Earp is visiting Doc Holliday in the hospital in the sanitarium. He's got consumption. He's dying. He's got his boots off and he pulls out his cards and he starts playing poker with them. And Doc Holliday looks at him and says, what do you want out of life? And, you know, and he had been a lawman, he had been an outlaw, you know, he'd done all these things, you know, he ran casinos. And he said, you know, all I want, Doc, is I want a normal life. And Doc Holliday looked at him and said, Wyatt, there is no such thing as a normal life. It's just all life. And I think we try and find balance between what we do at work and what we do personally, and it's all just life. And what we have to, what the decision we need to make, and people have known me for the skull ring I wear. And, you know, I wear a skull ring because it's memento mori. Remember, you will die. You'll see skulls in all these Renaissance paintings in Italy. And it's the notion of remember, you will die. And that the two most important decisions you can make every day is who you spend time with and how you spend your time.
It's all just life. But in life, just as in business, crisis can strike at any time. That means even the most meticulously curated calendars aren't set in stone.
When my son got sick in 2001 and he had to battle cancer, I quit my job at Cigna and I went and lived with him in his hospital room for a year and a half. My career was meaningless. His life was far more important to me. And he's the only one to ever survive his cancer. He's now 35 years old. He's got two kids and a beautiful wife. He was not supposed to survive. He's the only one who's ever survived that cancer. And so I think we need to make those decisions every day. And so the process of making that decision really more and more relies on how do you think about managing your time? And the best way to manage your time is to be present.
One of Bertolini's preferred tactics is meditation. It's a practice he cites as a starting point for beginning the day on the right foot.
I get up and do yoga and meditation every morning, and I'm thinking about all those things that are my attachments in life. Meditation is the progressive elimination of attachments. And so most people think when you do meditation, it's all black and dark and you know, these revelations come to you out of the mist. It's not. You get all this noise in your head and you say, oh, I can't meditate because I'm thinking about all these stupid things. Well, all those stupid things are your attachments. When you eliminate attachments, all of a sudden you're clear-headed and you're present and you can make those decisions every day much more effectively about how you're spending your time and who you spend it with. And so people say, well, when do you do that? I had somebody say in the thing, well, you know, when you got so much crap to do, how do you do that? And I say, well, you know what? If I don't take care of my own crap, I can't take care of anybody else's crap. So I got to take care of that first. And what I did is I looked at my calendar over a period of time. I kept track. And I said, okay, how do I change the way I use my time? And for me, it was getting up at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning and do my yoga, my meditation, or going out for a bicycle ride. I went into work clear-headed. I went into work present. I went into work to help people and to be available for people. And that made a huge difference in my ability to lead.
World 50's Excel in Your First Year is a compilation of perspectives from current and former C-suite executives designed to shorten the learning curve of new-to-role leaders. Explore the insights at world50.com/insights.